Raza Siddiqui, Teal, Mr. Ceasefire Hardiman against the grain. We got a very exciting show today, a lot going on. We've got new criteria coming out, 16 and plus. If you're 16 and plus in Illinois coming out next week, you qualify for the COVID vaccine. Mm. So we have Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, who's going to join us today. I'm going to see, is Cook County up for the challenge? We've got a lot of challenges coming out with that, Teal. I know we've been talking about that quite extensively, so what do you think?
Oh, no, it's an honor to be on the show today, and I'm happy to see Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle joining us here today on Against the Grain. So I think we have a very lively discussion about everything that's going on in Cook County in a positive way. Let's see what's happening out in society right now.
Absolutely. And as always, we invite you to call in and be in this dialogue with us, 773-763-9278. And also later on the show, we have Sean Easton, he's been on the show before talking about walking with a warrior, his endeavor to get out there and make a difference on the south and the west side, and we're going to talk to him a little bit more about that, too. But let's get to Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle right away. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Siddiqui. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining us. So one of the big things we wanted to talk about is coming up next week, the qualifications change in the state. If you're 16 and older, you qualify for these, for the COVID vaccination. Do you feel like Cook County is up for that challenge?
Yes, and I'm very grateful to the governor for his help and support, in particular for the vaccines we received and the National Guard men and women who helped us distribute them. We have 5 mass vaccination sites, and I think we're about to stand up the 6th. One is at the Tinley Park Convention Center, one at South Suburban College in South Holland, one in River Grove. Let's see, that's
Forest Park, right?
One in Forest Park in an old big box store in a shopping center there, and one in Des Plaines, likewise in an old big box store. So we've got these huge mass vaccination sites that can vaccinate thousands of people a day, and as a result, we're making real headway in ramping up the number of people and number and the percentage of folks in the county vaccinated.
Well, you know, Board President, I'm happy to hear you talk about that, especially like for the younger people, because lately there's been an increase in COVID-19, you know, like with the youth population, so to speak. That's what the numbers are dictating. So I'm just happy to see that you all are addressing it for the young people as well here in Cook County. That's so important. And my co-host said, are we prepared? So it appears that you all are prepared to handle the big surge in people becoming vaccinated. That's an honor, Board President.
Well, thank you. You know, I want to make it clear that people who are in preceding groups, that is 1A, 1B, 1C, are, of course, still eligible, and I encourage everyone to get their shot. So 1A was healthcare workers and long-term care residents. 1B was people over 65 and essential workers. B plus people who had underlying conditions who are under 65. I mean, everybody is now eligible as of April 12th. And you can go to vaccine.cookcountyil. That's vaccine with 2 C's, .cookcountyil.
Okay.
.gov. And that's the website. And you can call 833-308-1988.
One other question. So a few weeks ago, you were in Des Plaines. You were kind of touring the facility out there with some other elected lawmakers. And I remember I was out there as well. One of the things that really caught my attention was just how systematic, almost like looking like a well-oiled machine, all these National Guards were able to kind of get people through the lines, process, getting everything going. Tell me this, from someone who's managed the county, to be able to see that kind of functionality, what is it like? What is it like to see the spirit of federal and county and state government coming together in this kind of synchronization?
Well, I can't tell you how grateful and relieved I am. You know, the last year at this time, we were in the beginning of a nightmare, and no vaccine in sight, and unsure how the disease was spread, and faced with, at about this time last year, half the people in our hospital had COVID-19. It was a pretty intense and difficult moment for those of us in public life who are responsible for the health and safety of our residents. And I'm relieved now to be in a place where we're not at the end of this pandemic, this plague, but at least we can see the end ahead of us. And it's really important that people continue to wear their masks, wash their hands, and keep their distance. Because even if you've had the vaccine, you know, some people will still get the disease and have the capacity to transmit it to others, even if they don't get really sick themselves. So we all have to take care of ourselves and take care of everyone else. And the best way to do that is to be safe and to get your vaccine.
Well, you know, Cook County Board President, I think I might end up wearing a mask for the next couple of years because I have to admit I haven't come down with a common cold or anything since I've been wearing a mask for 1 year in a row. I mean, 1 year right now. I just want to say that. So that's a major. So the mask definitely play a role in keeping you safe. I must admit, I plan to double up on my mask. So I don't want to put you on the spot, Cook County Board President. I know I keep saying that. Have you been vaccinated as of yet?
Yes. So I'm over 65. And
yes.
The first day I could be vaccinated was January 25th, and so I was.
Right on.
I got the two-shot Moderna vaccine, but you should take whatever vaccine is available to you. Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, just get vaccinated.
So are the people here in Cook County, the state of Illinois, and the city of Chicago, are we kind of concerned about this new strain of COVID that may be coming from out of South Africa? I was looking at some research. They were saying the new strain can go around the vaccine or something like that. There's been a few little stories out there in the universe about it. Have you heard anything about the new strain, Tony Preckwinkle?
Well, there's three new strains. One is the UK strain, which is growing in numbers here. The other one is the South African, and then the third is the Brazilian. And so far, the vaccine seems to be holding against all three of them.
Hmm.
But the problem we have in the world, frankly, is that there are huge numbers of countries where not one single person has been vaccinated. And as long as the virus has a pool of unvaccinated people to kind of rumble around in, we're going to get new strains, new mutations. And so we need to get vaccinated as quickly as we possibly can and get the vaccine out to the rest of the world. That's not only good diplomacy, but it's just in our self-interest to try to get the world vaccinated. And then, frankly, we're going to have to probably have booster shots every year, just as we have booster shots for the annual flu. You know, we're going to have booster shots for COVID for whatever variant is predominant, you know, in that particular season. So no, I think this is going to be with us for a very long time, and we need to do everything we can to protect ourselves and the people we love and our friends and neighbors.
President Preckwinkle, I'm going to ask this. So there have been studies that have shown that there are a significant amount of people who are still resistant, hesitant to getting this vaccine. As much as we've been out there saying that, hey, this is safe, organizations like the Chicago Federation of Labor have held large vaccination events. People are trying to get out at a grassroots effort that this is something that should be done. However, some studies I'm reading are showing 1 out of 4 people are still hesitant about it. Have you directly had the opportunity to address this? Is this a public health problem that your organization is kind of trying to counteract? How do you deal with or how do you have these discussions?
Well, first of all, if a quarter of the population is hesitant, that means 3/4 of the population isn't. So the first thing we got to do is get those 3/4 who aren't hesitant vaccinated. Dr. Fauci, you may recall, has suggested that when we get to 70-75% of the population, we'll have a much better handle on the virus. We'll have what he calls herd immunity. But 2 weeks ago, maybe 2.5-3 weeks ago, we started the My Shot campaign. And so it's a multi-platform campaign encouraging people to get their shots, you know, black and brown folks in particular. You know, I got my shot so I can hug my grandchildren. I got my shot so I can go to church. I got my shot so I can, you know, visit with my parents. You know, we all have to understand that it's not just for us that we get our shots. It's for everybody we care about because we could be a vector of the disease if we don't ensure our own, we don't ensure our own safety. We potentially endanger others.
Yes. So, just to switch gears just a little bit here. Now, what about the Cook County? How's everything working out as far as your plans to help boost the economy? You know, maybe let's say one day at a time. I have to say it like that because this COVID could change at any time. We may end up going back under a lockdown. You never know with this new strain or new variants or whatever. So what are some of the plans to boost the economy here in Cook County, Board President?
Well, we got, as a result of the American Rescue Plan, which was passed, the $1.3 trillion plan that was passed earlier this year in Congress and signed by the president, we got close to $1 billion.
Hmm.
We clearly are going to have to use a lot of that on our vaccination efforts. You know, it's what we're doing is pretty expensive. I mean, we rent huge big box stores. We have our own staff, National Guard staff. We have vaccine. I mean, we've got personal protective equipment. I mean, all kinds of things that we need to secure that are pandemic related. But we also need to try to support our population. Just at the end of this week, we had a rental assistance program for suburban Cook County, because that's where our money is allocated. It's for suburban Cook. The city of Chicago gets its own allocation.
Yeah.
But we had a rental assistance program where you could apply for rental assistance of up to $15,000 to pay 12 months, up to 12 months back rent and 3 months prospective rent. So we're trying to help individuals who are in need, and we're putting together kind of reprises of the programs that we had last year to aid small businesses and gig workers and others who have been tremendously impacted by the pandemic. So we're looking to do some of the same kinds of supports for small businesses and individuals, for homeless organizations that serve the homeless, organizations that try to work with families to prevent evictions, mortgage assistance, all of the things that we did last year. We're hoping to ramp up again shortly as the new money becomes available.
Well, good information. That's very important, Brother Raza.
Well, no, and I was just going to ask if this was part of the Homeowners Relief and Community Recovery Act, and if you could just kind of elaborate, because I know, what was it actually just yesterday that you did a ribbon cutting, correct?
Well, yesterday we did a ribbon cutting around affordable housing.
Okay.
And yeah, we were in Englewood at the Stewart Building, which is right in the vicinity of St. Bernard Hospital, and we were talking about an effort to try to change the rules a little bit for scavenger sales to make it easier for governments and developers and local communities to restore and reclaim abandoned properties in their communities. Because abandoned properties are not just magnets for illicit activity. They reduce the market value of every house on the block. For every boarded up building you have, every other house on the block loses 10% of its value. Mm. So if you have two boarded buildings in your block, it's a 20% loss in value, and so on. So if we can take some of these ghost buildings, derelict buildings, and fix them up, it's not just the benefit of people who might live or rent in them, but the whole community. And so that's one of the things we're focusing on. We're very grateful for Lakeisha Collins, Representative Collins, who is the sponsor in the House.
Okay.
Senator Steve Stadler, who's the sponsor in the Senate for this legislation.
Tia, what has been some of your experience on the front line, kind of being out in the streets with some of the abandoned buildings in terms of, we were talking about the property value, the 10% reduction, but just about the kind of environment that it creates, fosters?
Well, you know how it is. Boy, President, what's going on? Like, you know, like on 79th Street, for example, from 79th and Damon all the way to 79th and South Shore, you know, I counted over 1,000 abandoned storefronts out there.
Wow.
And I'm hoping, you know, eventually, you know, as we work together, we can kind of help reinvigorate, you know, that particular area, not just 79th Street, but, you know, 63rd, 79th, parts of 47th Street, Madison and Pulaski. Then you got the South Suburbs and the West Suburbs. We don't want to forget the suburban Cook County area. So what I would like to see, Boy, President, what more can we do to help kind of open up more businesses on that 79th Street, because I think that what it does, it gives a sense of hopelessness for a lot of young people that are growing up in some of these really distressed communities, economically distressed communities. You know, the Regal Theater is still sitting there, and that should have been like an icon in the black community, so to speak. And I know they're about to build the President Obama, you know, library and everything around Jackson Park. So what are your thoughts about maybe trying to rebuild some parts of that 79th Street corridor there? Maybe even if we took Stony Island all the way to South Shore, Boy, President.
Well, I tell you, the first thing you should remember is the allocations that we get for affordable housing are for the suburbs.
Okay.
The city gets its own separate allocation, and of course that 79th Street, 63rd Street are in the city.
Yes.
The tool that the county does have to support affordable housing is the land bank. And actually, the press conference that we had yesterday at the Stewart Building in Englewood was with the land bank, because it was through the efforts of the land bank that this property that had been derelict, just open, abandoned for more than a decade, I think it was 15 years, was reclaimed. A development team was found, and that development team put it back, 42 affordable housing units, back on the market.
Hmm.
So the tool that we have is the land bank, and so when properties are tax delinquent, we can go into the property, the scavenger sale for property taxes, and acquire some of these and get them in the hands of people who want to develop them. But I think the larger frankly, I spent 20 years as alderman, and the larger strategy we have to have is, frankly, a decommercialization strategy on many of our business trips, because the way in which people shop has changed. People go to big, you know, big shopping centers.
Yeah.
When everybody walked to where they were going or took the streetcars, we had vital commercial strips. But when people get in their cars and drive for 15 or 20 minutes to go shopping at a big box retailer, we don't have the same either foot traffic or vehicle traffic on our commercial strips. And so we're going to have to focus commercial development on transit nodes, transportation nodes, and decommercialize a lot of that so that we can have affordable housing for our communities, which we desperately need, and so that we don't have abandoned storefronts.
Right on.
So we have been talking with Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, and we look forward to continuing this conversation after this commercial break. We're going to continue the conversation on decommercialization and also more about vaccinations. We invite you to join in on this conversation. You can call in at 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. Looks like we have a couple of callers, and we'll get to you guys right after this commercial break.
All right, good information.
Megan Financial is an independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, a broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
33 Realty is a fully integrated real estate services firm specializing in investment brokerage, property management, leasing, distressed real estate services, and construction services via its sister company, Cubed Construction, for a variety of asset classes across the multifamily and commercial real estate sectors. 33 Realty provides full-service solutions to complex real estate assignments with industry-leading staff invested in the process. For more information, please visit 33realty.com. 33 Realty, your foundation for real estate success.
Against the grain, TO Mr. Ceasefire Hardiman, Raza Siddiqui on with Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. We're talking a little about how the county is actually addressing the COVID numbers. Looks like they're rolling out a couple of new facilities. We talked about four new facilities coming up. TO, what else kind of struck you about some of the conversations before we bring President Tony Preckwinkle back on?
No, my thing is with the board president, I would like to kind of talk about the gun violence. You know, that's an area that I work in. So, you know, in Chicago, homicides up by 50-something percent here in Chicago so far this year. Last year, actually, the homicides were 53%. Carjackings kind of like quadrupled that in Chicago, like over 1,400 carjackings. And then this year, I think it's like more so like 33%. We're up 33% in homicides, all right? Mm-hmm. So something has got to give in Chicago and throughout Cook County. And then the board president, I'm pretty sure she's aware, last year, even the South suburbs got hit pretty strong with homicides. A lot of shootings on the expressways all over the place. So I would like to talk to her about maybe some of the plans from the county to address the gun violence here in the state and definitely here in Cook County in Chicago. So that's something that's really on my mind because too many, the little kid was just shot in the drive-by on Lakeshore Drive down there by Grant Park. And then we have a whole lot of, there's a laundry list of issues with reducing gun violence. So it's not easy. Police doing the best they can do. Some of the organizations doing the best they can do. But somewhere along the way, we got to kind of if you see the strategies are not really working per se, it's time to change some of the policing and some of the violence prevention strategies here in Chicago.
Right. So wanted to see, Board President, if you could weigh in on some of this.
Sure. I think the most important thing to remember is the pandemic has had a multitude of health impacts. You know, clearly people who have gotten the disease have gotten ill. Some have been hospitalized and some have succumbed to the disease. You're probably aware that in the last year, we've lost 500,000 Americans.
Yes.
More than in World War I, World War II, and Vietnam combined in 1 year.
Wow.
So there have been devastating consequences in terms of people's physical health, but I think it's important to remember that it's also had an impact on people's mental health. Mm. You know, suicides were up about 50%. We had more murders, I think, than any year since 1996.
Yes, indeed.
Most of those in Chicago. And I think this is a function of the economic impacts of the pandemic and the stress and anxiety and despair that people feel and are unable to cope with. Another metric that went up was opioid deaths. So, I mean, we're seeing an increase in murders, opioid deaths, and suicides. So that's an indication to me that the virus and the economic collapse are having an extremely detrimental effect on the mental health of all of us, not just in Cook County, but across the country.
Yes, indeed.
I think that anxiety, that despair, that anger, that sense of helplessness and hopelessness gets translated into some of the things we've been talking about: gun violence, opioid deaths, suicides.
Yeah, definitely.
What we got to do is work to try to not only make sure everybody's vaccinated, get a handle on the physical health stuff, but do what we can to provide more support for people. This has been a really, the best way to describe it is a really traumatic period. So we've got to get a handle on the trauma and support people, and also do everything we can to be sure that our recovery is as energetic and quick as possible, so that people have jobs and can support themselves and their family and aren't despairing.
Okay, good stuff. So we're going to bring a call on. Norbert wants to ask you a question about the developmental, cities, whatever the case may be. So we have Norbert, you're on the air with Against the Grain with T.O. Hardeman and Raza Siddiqui. You have a question for the Cook County Board President?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking my call, and it's great to talk to you again. I compare where I live in Naperville to where I once worked in Englewood all the time, and I like everything you're saying, and I think you're doing an awesome job. But I disagree a little bit on the commercialization, because I think every neighborhood in Chicago should have a downtown that's as strong and as resilient and as vibrant as downtown Naperville. And I don't see any reason why that can't happen in the long term, that we have vibrant commercial areas in the city like there used to be. And if a business leaves downtown Naperville or a restaurant closed, even with the pandemic, there's only about five vacant storefronts in downtown Naperville, but they're filling back up fast. Businesses are coming back in. And I think that's all we need. We need that kind of focused development to get jobs in the neighborhoods in the city.
Okay.
It's not economic development. I'm just saying that.
I'm fine. Thanks.
The intensity of commercial development that we had historically, when shopping patterns were different, is not sustainable now. And furthermore, with all due respect to the gentleman, the median income in Naperville is considerably different than it is in Englewood, and so there's not the aggregate dollars to support the businesses that there might have been in the past when Englewood was more densely populated, and it's pretty much hollowed out like many of our South and West Side neighborhoods now. So we have to build up the number of rooftops before we can hope for the kind of commercial development that people in Naperville take for granted.
Yeah. I understand, Board President, also, and I want to say this, too, but, a lot of African-American people have moved out of Chicago, and I know a lot of them probably moved to the south suburbs, west suburbs, but we've lost a massive amount of our population as far as African-Americans in Chicago, and I'm hoping that we can eventually have some of people to move back to Chicago, from all races, don't get me wrong, but I would love to see more African-American people move back to Chicago so we can have more of a balance, and hopefully we can get the gun violence down and people feel a little bit more safe, in Chicago, and just do the best we can. That's all I'm saying, and I think it's possible. We just had to, quite a few more calls coming in for you, so I don't want to do all the talk. I want to make sure we get some calls in for you before you get out of here. Okay, Board President?
Sure.
All right, cool. You want to bring on Sean?
Yeah, let's bring on Sean. Sean's actually our guest for the next segment as well. But I think actually that would be kind of a good transition as well, because County Board President was talking about kind of the mental health issues that we've seen kind of go hand in hand with COVID, right? Everyone thinks of this as a pandemic, but they don't realize the isolation, everything else that has gone into it. And Sean Easton, as you recall, Tio, was on our show before talking about his initiatives to kind of bring policing and actually he would describe it best, but it's about bringing in vets into communities. He's been doing so on the in the Austin neighborhood, about kind of providing mentorship to people in the community. So actually, Sean, actually, why don't we talk to you for a second about has this pandemic actually reinvigorated you to have this initiative take off, or has it kind of slowed it down?
Hey, all. How are you today? Tony, nice to be on the phone with you. I think this pandemic has just kind of exploded everything and twisted everything around. And, you know, people have just really tried to reinvent themselves and had to do that in different ways. So it did reinvigorate me from that standpoint as real estate slowed down, and it allowed me to spend more time in the community working with the police and working with the neighbors in Austin. Just basically to break bread and have dialogue. I think we had a lot of success in the fall with our tailgate for the socially distanced tailgates, I'll say, for the Bears games. And it really brought a lot of people together, and we were able to actually find some resources for some homeless people that came to those games as well.
And Sean, yeah, so I think this is actually a really good teaser as to what we're going to talk about in the next segment as well. But we do want to keep you on the line because we do want to actually get a dialogue going with County Board President as well. Hold on for us for 1 second as we go to Mitchell, who wants to talk about property taxes. Mitchell, you're on with TO Mr. Ceasefire Hardiman and Raza Siddiqui and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle.
Right. How you doing, Mitchell?
Yes. Good afternoon, everybody. You know, Cook County has a pension problem, and our property taxes basically were increased by $94 million. And there's no consequence. You keep on basically, you know, kicking the can down the road. As you know, that state, all the public schools are supported by 86% of the taxpayers, and only 14% comes from the state and federal. Is there going to be any type of what I call a break that we're finally going to get in this, you know, by according to the University of Illinois at Chicago, we're in the most corrupt city in the country and the third most corrupt state in the union. And there has to be some oversight, because even though that we have all these dispensaries that are going everywhere in my neighborhood, and I live in an area that has, in Cook County, that has a dispensary and a casino, and my property taxes, they doubled. Actually, they almost tripled. So why these officials, okay, and the politicians in a position of power, okay, are basically giving themselves monopoly money to basically line their pockets? What about the taxpayers that have to foot the bill for all these particular efforts? I would like to have some kind of objective point of view to get us out of this race, if we can, because you're seeing a mass exodus of people leave the state for a reason. People are tired of basically having 86% of what I call the responsibility to fund these public schools. There's nobody in the state of the union, okay, to have that kind of combination.
And Mitchell, we do actually want to, we've heard this argument, and we do want to give County Board President the opportunity to address
respond,
this. And I'm sure you've heard this multiple times before. I'm sure this is not the first time, County Board President. How do you respond to this when it comes up? Because even living in the suburbs in DuPage County, where I am, this is a question that comes up quite a bit. So I'm sure it's not your first rodeo dealing with it. What do you got to say?
Well, I think we have some real challenges in the state of Illinois because we rely on local property taxes to fund our schools. And if you look at your property tax bill, the biggest bite is your local school district. Hmm. The biggest bite is local school district. Cook County government hasn't raised property taxes for county government since 1996. So property taxes have dramatically increased, but not because Cook County government has increased the dollars that come to us through property taxes. So that's the first thing I'd say in defense of county government. The second thing I'd say is that clearly we need a different funding formula for our public schools in the state of Illinois. And, you know, the Constitution of the state says that the state should be the basic provider of funds for public education, and that's not.
Okay.
Since the Constitution was enacted in whatever it was, 1971, the state has never lived up to that. And so what we have is a system that perpetuates inequality. Those districts that are wealthy and pour lots of money into their schools, and those districts, and that includes the city of Chicago and many of our rural districts that aren't so wealthy, don't have the resources that our wealthier suburbs, for example, have. So we perpetuate the inequality that's already existing by providing better education to the rich than the poor. So, I mean, we desperately need to look again at our funding formulas and try to shift the burden away from property taxes to state government for funding our local schools. But that's a long-term battle. We've made some progress in the last couple of years. We've got a long way to go.
County Board President, one other question that I had personally, and I forget which publication I read this in, either the Daily Herald, the Tribune, but there is an increase with the amount of people who are running for school board positions, elected school board positions. And what this article stated was in the past, it was always related to taxing issues. But more and more now, they're seeing people get in with quality of education issues and reopening school issues, that type of thing. And I just wanted to kind of weigh in and see what your feeling was on elected school boards. I know it's kind of a situation Chicago's dealing with right now, and I wanted to kind of see where you stand with that. You talked about the funding formulas. What do you think about elected school boards and that type of philosophy in governing?
Well, I've always been a proponent of elective school boards. It's one of my platforms when I ran for mayor, as was true of Mayor Lightfoot. So here's where we are. Every school district in the state, with the exception of the city of Chicago, has an elected school board. So we have 102 counties, God knows how many school districts, and the only school district in the state that does not have an elected school board is the city of Chicago. And, you know, I think if that kind of democracy is good enough for every place else in the state, it's surely good enough for the city of Chicago.
Yeah, I support elected school boards as well. I think it's very important. A lot of people are running now. They're putting their head in the race, so to speak. So that's important information. So, County Board President, we really, really admire the fact that you came on our show today. It's a lot of good information. So you have another question for
us? Actually, more than a question, I'd like to invite you to. I know you got a busy schedule, but if you could stay on 10 minutes as we bring on Sean Easton, because I think he has some he has a philosophy with what he's trying to create, and I think it would be good to have you weigh in. But if you have to run, I do understand that, too. If we could still maybe 5-10 more minutes of your time, we would appreciate that if you could stick on with us.
I'd be happy to. Thank
okay,
you.
Good.
Okay,
good.
And let's bring on Sean Easton. Sean, you're on with Teo Hardiman, Raza Siddiqui. You introduced a little about, a lot of our listeners know about your program, to try to get vets to mentor people in the communities in the Austin neighborhood. How has that been going? And in terms of grant funding, how's that going? And is it going in the direction you want it to?
So the answer is yes. We're moving in the direction we would like to go with it. We're actually having one of our first events coming up here on the 24th with the 15th District Police Department, you know, softball, golf with the police and the community all together. And, you know, as you were touching on it before, we are uniting veterans and civilians to revitalize communities. And our focus on that is building future leaders. And how we're doing that is we are bringing in veteran mentorship and violence prevention intervention 24/7. Life-on-life mentorship. So that's our overall goal that we are committed to achieving.
Sean, you have a unique opportunity here that many people don't have the first time that they call in, which is to have maybe a sentence, a question, just a little discussion with our county board president. What's one thing you'd like to say to her in terms of what you're doing or what kind of partnerships could be reached? Because I know you're doing a lot with the police department in Chicago, but I'm sure there's also always avenues you're looking to explore to bring more attention. So why don't I give you 30 seconds here.
Oh, that's a great question. Can I have 30 seconds to think before I ask?
That counts as your 30 seconds.
That's right.
But one of the things I do want... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I mean, my biggest thing is how do we keep going forward, you know, bridging the gaps between the police and the community? Because, you know, I grew up in Glenview, Illinois, where I knew a lot of the cops by name and they knew me. And it was always a discussion and a friendly discussion when I was in trouble. You know, Sean, what are you up to now? Shouldn't you be home right now? It's 10 o'clock. And I'm like, yeah, I snuck out, you know. And it was that conversation. So how, you know, to me is what steps can we take to really make it more of a community policing rather than just crime intervention? That would be my question that pops in my head. And I know that's a really hard one because I don't think a lot of people have the answer yet.
Do you have a question for the board president, Sean?
I think
that was a question. Okay.
More or less, how do we bridge and bring back that community policing? And County Board President, I'd be interested. We didn't talk a lot about the policing aspect. What do you think about that? How do we bring back the community kind of involvement, the community relationships, alliances at a county level?
Well, first of all, the county does not have a local police force. The sheriff has some officers who are assigned unincorporated Cook County, and we serve a couple of our south suburban communities that do not have police resources. But police services are overwhelmingly provided by the cities, towns, and villages within the county. So that kind of, you know, local law enforcement is exactly that, local law enforcement. It's not countywide law enforcement. But, you know, I think as a country, we've failed our police officers by providing them with insufficient training, particularly training about how to de-escalate situations, how to deal with folks who are in the midst of a mental health crisis. And, you know, it's been suggested that we need to have staff resources to, when calls come in about a family member who's in crisis, to send social workers and psychologists out, not necessarily police officers. We ask our police officers to do an extraordinary, the breadth of things we ask them to do is pretty extraordinary. And I think we need to reduce what we expect of them in terms of breadth and intensify their training to deal with the stuff that's left. And as I said, a lot of de-escalation, a lot of, you know, how to deal with people who are in crisis, that kind of training, and I think that's been insufficient. I mean, it's not good enough just to teach people to go to a gun range and, you know, how to shoot properly. That's not, surely that's what's required of our officers, necessary but not sufficient. And it's beyond the shooting range and responding to those kinds of crisis situations where your gun is wrong that we need to provide help for them.
No, you don't have to chime. Yeah, go ahead, Board President. My fault. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I would say it may not be true now because I haven't been an alderman for 10 years. But when I was alderman, there were a number of police officers who told me that they got through their whole 20 plus year career and never drew their gun.
Right.
Our streets are a lot more violent than they used to be, and so that may not be as prominent as it once was. But we've got to provide more intensive and different training to our officers if we want them to be successful in our communities.
Yeah, that's the reason why I wanted to chime in, because I'm looking at what happened to George Floyd. I know if the police officers had been trained properly, they probably would have allowed George Floyd just sit him on the curb for a minute so he can cool out a little bit, because he was claustrophobic and he had some other issues. He was paranoid. He was obviously, he may have been on drugs. You know, that hasn't necessarily been confirmed. But the thing is, if you have the proper training, knowing how to, you know, observe or what to look for if a person's high on drugs and how to treat that person and deal with that individual. So I believe we wouldn't be here today in Minneapolis and what happened there with the riots and everything, if the officers would have just sat George Floyd on the curb and allowed him to cool down a little bit, Board President. That's just my thoughts. So I concur with you because, you know, I've been on the front line dealing with a lot of different issues throughout the state of Illinois, definitely Chicago. But we need more training in the area of cultural sensitivity training. So are you concerned a little bit about this videotape that might be released about the Latino 13-year-old kid that was shot and killed recently? And we don't know all the facts. I just want to put that out there. But I know a lot of people are trying to brace themselves for something that may happen possibly one way or the other. Do you have any concerns about that, Tony Preckwinkle?
Well, I'm tremendously concerned. You know,
okay.
I've always said that I live in a city in which black and brown people can be murdered by the police with impunity. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean that every police shooting is a murder. But, you know, when Jason Van Dyke was the only officer in 30 years, I think it was at least 30 years, who's been charged with murdering one of our citizens?
Yes.
You know, that's not true. You know, the police murdered lots more people in that 30-year period than just Laquan McDonald. So, you know, unfortunately, we haven't trained our police well, and we haven't held those who are bad actors accountable. And, you know, the relatively modest number of police officers who are bad actors, you know, tarnish the rest of the force because we don't do anything about them. I mean, Jason Van Dyke had a long list of complaints against him. He should have been off the force.
Yes.
Before he ever shot Laquan McDonald in the back. I mean, no, don't get me started.
No, I got you. I'm hearing you loud and clear. I appreciate it. I like that fire in you. I really do.
And we want to thank you for your time in joining us today on your Sundays. So is there any one or two final words you want to get out before we cut to our commercial break? And then we'll be back on with Sean Easton, who's talking about police partnerships with vets. But I want to give you the opportunity to say one or two quick things, County Board President Tony Preckwinkle.
Sure. You can get information about vaccinations on vaccine, that's two C's, vaccine.cookcountyil.gov, G-O-V, vaccine.cookcountyil.gov,
or 833-308-1988. 833-308-1988. Do yourself and everybody you love a favor. Get your shot as quickly as you can. And in the meantime, wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance.
That's right.
Sounds good. And with that, we're going to go to this commercial break. We'll be back with Sean Easton with Walking with the Warrior.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate the county board.
Independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, a broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
Ever wonder about the story behind the story? Who are the people you watch delivering the news, filming the scenes, and putting pen to paper to tell the story you read in your morning paper? Tune in to Media Essential Workers on Facebook and YouTube to find out. With constant changes in the Chicago media landscape, one reliable source keeps track of the people bringing you the stories. Media Essential Workers, the premier live stream telling the story of the storytellers. Sunday nights at 7. Like, subscribe, and follow Media Essential Workers to find out about special shows during the week. Hosted by Raza Siddiqui, Media Essential Workers gets the story of the storytellers.
Okay, hello everybody. We're back now. Tio Hardiman and Raza Siddiqui going against the grain here today at 820 AM WCPT Radio, 820 AM Progressive Radio. So we're happy to be here. So let's get right down to the dialogue. We have Mr. Jim. He's been holding on for a while from South Elgin. We also have Mr. Roosevelt on the line. And I know Jim and Roosevelt kind of go back and forth on some issues. So Jim, what's on your mind today? Then we get right back to Sean in a little bit here. What's on your mind today, Jim?
Well, I did have a couple of things based on our conversation last week with Roosevelt, but since she had Prankwick on, I had a conversation with her at the Operation Push event in Soldiers Field last year, a year ago. And I asked her, I said, you know what? First of all, you know, if you want to keep business in Cook County in Illinois, you got to roll back all these stupid taxes because it's so much cheaper to go from Chicago to Indiana to buy stuff because taxes are so much lower. We lose a lot of economic activity here. Also, the reason why I became so political is because commercial property taxes in Cook County, you know, drive businesses out of the area because, you know, for the same value of the property, you're going to pay twice as much money for a commercial building versus a non-commercial. And the only thing Cook County did do about 20 years ago, they started what's called the mixed use, which, you know, brought a certain portion of formerly commercial real estate into the residential rate, which is why I'm still in my office in Bartlett in Cook County. Otherwise, I would have had to have left a long time ago. But I asked her also, I said, why do you support, you know, the pop tax that when it was implemented, it drove business out of the county, and especially in the collar areas like, in, you know, next to Kane County, DuPage, all the Cook County businesses that sold pop saw a drastic drop because people go across the county line.
Jim, we want to thank you for your comment with this. And as you know, we will get back to your call next week. You're one of our frequent callers here, and we always enjoy hearing your perspective. I just had to cut you off at this moment because we are not in a position where we have the county board president to talk about this at this point anymore. But what we do want to get to, like you said, one of the things is these volunteer opportunities we have that cost taxpayers nothing. And it's just people who are out there trying to create a difference as a not-for-profit. And we have Sean Easton, and I want to invite him again because, Sean, you've been on this program before, but you're kind of starting something new to talk about what it is you're doing. So, Sean, tell us a little bit about that and how you hope it'll bridge that gap between what's happening in the community and veterans who can be mentors to people.
Well, I mean, it's definitely empowering veterans to come in on a new mission and do that. And I want to touch real quick on, you know, I really appreciated Tony's answer with the training for the police because I really do think that, you know, everyone's talking about the funding the police, but I think if you actually put in more capital and put in better training programs, they'll have a lot more success with that. So I really do appreciate Tony's comment on that. I think it was spot on. But yeah, so for us, I mean, that's basically what we're focused on, is how to bring these, you know, give these vets a new mission, bring in civilians, because there's a lot of people from Chicago who want to help and want to see change in the inner city and see this violence go away, and just bring everyone together and start putting initiatives out there and breaking bread together that really, you know, build families, build communities in these areas that already have vibrant communities. Because normally in these communities, when you go in there, it's only about 1% of the population that's causing the issue. And you really, you want to give safety to people by that. So that's kind of one of our main focuses.
No, I was just going to ask you, as someone who intervenes on the front end, do you you probably agree with at least some of this, right, in terms of the early intervention, the early getting in there?
No, it's very important, early intervention, because it's about stopping it before it happens, you know, stopping before the shots are fired. You know, I don't talk about it a lot on the show, but just Friday over in the Inglewood community, I received a phone call from a young man that purchased a building over there, and the former owners did not want him to have access to his building, so they shot at him, okay? Mm-hmm. And he returned fire because he's concealed carry. Nobody was hit. But after that, I received a call, and he told me who the guys were that shot at him. And I got them guys to come to the table, and we mediated the conflict on the front end before anybody was injured, which is very, very important. And I would like to applaud the support of the young brothers from the streets over there, too, because they know me as Mr. Ceasefire, and they stepped up to the plate, and they brought their guy to the table. And we worked it out. It was kind of hectic. You know, everybody was, they were mad, you know, of course, because shots were fired. But we got a chance to mediate the conflict. And in the the story is that his family lost the building due to foreclosure, and somebody purchased the property, so you got to let it go, bro. It's a sad situation for you and your family, but the main thing, you don't have to hurt nobody because of this. And now the owner of the building and the guy that shot, they're okay. You know, we didn't have to get the police involved in it. We was able to, you know, solve the issue right there on the front line.
Sean, so I'm going to ask you this. So Tio has had many years in doing this. Yeah. He's built up that credibility. Like he said, people have called him up and said, hey, listen, this is something we want you to help. You have a barrier of entry. This is something new. You're kind of coming in from the outside and trying to build these alliances. How do you do that? How do you break that barrier of entry and create something new and get people to open up and trust you like they have with Tio for his years of doing this work?
Well, I don't think no matter how much I do, I'll ever be able to replicate what Tio has done. I mean, it's pretty incredible what you've done. But what we're doing is we're doing events in the neighborhood. We're trying to be part of the community. We're being participants in the community. You know, the tailgates we were throwing. We're doing the police softball and golf with the community members. We have a couple other fun events that we have planned out, and then we will kick the tailgates back up for the Bears game. Unfortunately, I don't know if the Bears are going to be as good as they were for the first five games of the season.
That's another conversation. No, that's right.
another day. But, Tio, that's incredible what you did in Englewood on Friday. And those are those conversations that need to happen. You know, hey, you know, what's actually going on? What's the true emotion behind why I'm pulling this weapon?
Right.
Is this actually a life or death situation that I need to defend myself? Or am I pulling this weapon because I am emotionally charged?
That's right.
And if we can start having those conversations and teaching people to take the emotions out of the moment, I think there can be some small wins. And it's got to be a daily thing where they're just small little wins, just like you did in Englewood. I think that was incredible. You know, we're also open to suggestions on how to build trust in the community. You know, we don't know it all. We want to hear what the community has to say, and we want to be partners.
Yeah, I may reach out to you, Sean, and to talk a little bit about maybe I can lend some of my expertise to you guys, okay?
Would love that.
Sean, okay. I understand you're also taking part in some more outreach for your organization. You are going to become not really rivals for us, but a little bit of competition. Hopefully you're not on the same time slot. But you guys are creating a podcast that you want to get out there, right, to get your message as to what you're doing out there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's going to be called Walking with a Warrior, Whiskey by the Fire. And what we're doing is Sergeant Jermaine Harris and I from CPD, he's a Marine, and you know, I'm just a local civilian here. We're going to be having a conversation when we bring on people who have had adversity in their life and have gotten through it, and we're really going to focus on people who have found success coming from poverty and how they have navigated out of poverty into a successful life. And that's going to be one of our focuses is just success stories.
Okay.
And, you know, it'll probably be a little bit different every time, but we really want to highlight and see if we can give some nuggets to people about how, you know, in their daily life, how they can be successful.
Yeah. And we want to invite our listeners to tune in on that, but not if it's between the hours of 3 and 4 o'clock when you'll be listening to Against the Grain right. with Teo Hardeman and Raza Siddiqui. But so, again, how can people find this podcast?
So it'll be up on our website. Our website is launching end of this week. I'm sorry, Thursday or Friday this week. And that is walkingwiththewarrior.org. And Raza, you know, I think we're gonna put it up in a couple other places. It'll be on Facebook. We're going to find a podcast forum for it. And we're going through those steps right now. We're probably about 4 weeks out from launching it, but we're really excited to start having these conversations.
All right. And then, Raza, if you don't mind, let's just try to squeeze Roosevelt in there for maybe 1 minute, 60
let's
seconds.
Let's do it. Let's
do it. Yeah, Roosevelt, we respect that you called, so we want to get you on for about 60 seconds, if possible, here, Roosevelt.
Guys, how are you doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I wanted to talk to the President Prakpak, but she left. But let me ask you guys, or whoever can answer this question. How much damage did it cause the state of Illinois by the previous administration, meaning Trump, playing favorites and not sending PPEs to the blue states and sending all the necessary stuff to Florida and Texas? I believe there was a incident. I'm sorry, I'm out of breath. I'm outside kind of running.
Okay.
It's okay. We're almost out of time here, so we got a minute, 30 seconds for you to address that deal.
Well, you know, the only thing I can tell you, Trump said he's coming back. Trump said he's making a comeback. He's going to take over the House, then he's going to take over the Senate, and he's going to become the president in 4 more years. I saw it in the news earlier this morning.
And hopefully that's responsive to your question, Roosevelt. And again, we want to thank everyone. We want to thank Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, along with Sean Easton, both of them taking time out of their Sunday to join all of us. Most of all, we want to thank you guys for always calling in and keeping us honest on our toes and getting the discussion and dialogue out there. We're always happy to take your calls here on Against the Grain. To you, Mr. Ceasefire Hardeman, Raza Siddiqui. You can also join us on our social media. So when you're not waiting on Sundays, you can join up on Facebook, right?
Yes, it is. And for people that want to reach out to me about Violence Interrupters, they can go to my website, violenceinterrupters.org. That's violenceinterrupters.org. And people can call me directly if you want to talk with me about anything related to reducing gun violence at 773-391-9072. They give me a call. I appreciate it.
Say that number one more time.
773-391-9072.
And always good information. No, we thank you guys for joining us on this Sunday, and we look forward to hearing from you next Sunday. Talk to you then. Raza Siddiqui, Teo, Mr. Ceasefire Hardeman, Against the Grain. Signing out.
Peace. Talk to you.